Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
All right, you made it to the end of another week. So did we. That's something anyway. We could build on that, right? There's something there. Today on The Nose, we're going to be talking about the social media outage. Remember that? Remember how horrible it was? No, probably not. But it did happen this week. We're also going to be talking about the way in which people meld their TV preferences with conversation. And if you can't talk to anybody about a TV show that you're watching, are you really having a television experience? That wasn't a very good explanation, but presumably I'll do better when we actually get to it. We also went to the movies. We saw Captain Marvel, and some of us are excited about it, and others of us have other feelings about it. And when I say we and us, I mean Susan Bigelow, librarian, columnist for CT News Junkie, and a science fiction fantasy novelist. Jim Chapdelaine is an Emmy Award-winning musician, producer, composer, and recording engineer, and a patient advocate for people with rare cancers. And Carolyn Payne is an actress, comedian, and dancer, and she is founder, director, and choreographer of Kinetic Dance. So yes, we will begin. We will begin with this theoretical, anyway, emergency that bestrode the entire world. It was maybe 14 hours long. I think some things might have stayed broken even longer than that. It affected Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, because they're all basically the same thing, but people don't even know that. But Susan, as somebody who was a very early adopter of all kinds of digital media, I mean you. I first knew you as a yes. blogger. I don't know. I think we have this thing in our heads, this notion that we've become completely dependent on social media. But this experience would suggest otherwise.
It kind of does. I think if all social media sort of went away, like if this was a Twitter outage too and YouTube died, that might be something different. But it's amazing how few people I know actually noticed that there was even an outage. I know that I tried to post a really witty comment with a GIF and that it didn't post. And I was like, you know what, the heck with it, and went away. Apparently there was a big whole outage and everyone was freaking out. It is a different reaction, I feel, because I feel like the reaction was pretty muted. It was a different reaction to when this happened like a couple of years ago. Everyone got much more concerned and worried. But maybe we just are like, oh, okay, it's broken. Good. Okay, that's fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sometimes in I've been giving a kind of lecture a few times recently, Jim, where I say, imagine that there's a switch on the wall, and if I pull that switch, we'll go back pre-digital media. You'll have sort of like Walter Cronkite and two newspapers in your town, but you won't have any of this other stuff. How many people want to throw the switch? It's interesting. I mean, it's older people who want to do it, but a lot of people do want to throw the switch. It is not as though they feel that they've arrived in the promised land here.
Well, one of the comments that was going back and forth in preparation to discuss this, which I also did not notice, was exactly what you were talking about, and maybe having a mandatory day off
yeah.
or taking a vacation.
Carolyn,
I think
it's
a good
idea.
That idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's so much less nobody really cared. I don't think anybody cared at all. And given the scope of the sort of conspiracies that we're inundated with daily, I would have thought that this would have risen quickly to something conspiratorial. But I think it was just a bad server or something like that. It didn't affect my life at all, and I don't know anyone whose life it affected.
Well, there were people calling 911, and, you know, I mean, you know.
Well, so I was really busy on Wednesday, and I think I would have noticed. I mean, I wouldn't have been freaking out, but I definitely would have noticed and continued to, like, try to log on. And when I did realize, like, it was down, I was like, oh, first I thought it was my phone. And then I was in the car and I was listening to Z100 because I was in the city, and they started talking about the social media outage, and they had people calling in to express how they were feeling about it. Mm-hmm. And this one woman called in and said, well, I took a nap And the guy's like, oh, because she's like, well, I'm not normally able to nap during the day because I'm too nervous about missing what's happening on the radio and on the social media. This woman called into the radio to admit that. Like, that's a cry for help. She can't nap because she's so nervous she's missing something on social media. I'm hoping it was like a joke call. But it was interesting. So I was listening to these people like call in and talk about the stress that they were under not having their Instagram for a couple hours. And that made me realize, I was like, I think this is a good thing. And I love social media, but I think that we could all do a one day a week where we don't have it.
I wonder if that sort of fear of missing out has kind of faded away from us a little bit.
I hope
because
so.
Because what we've it's discovered that culture. What we're missing is really terrible.
Dank memes. There was a big shortage of memes and GIFs.
That's like, true. Like and you know, I love a good dank meme. The danker, the better.
Right.
But I felt it was okay if I missed a couple of them. I missed some of the regular garbage going around. It's all right.
Wednesday's like a nice day to have an outage for it, too. I feel like that was it was well-timed in the week. Because, you know, like Monday, you're kind of like catching up on people's like weekend. You have throwback Thursday, you know, maybe like Friday or Saturday, Sunday.
Outage Wednesday.
Right. I like outage
I love
Wednesday.
Outage Wednesday.
Right. Everyone's going to look forward to
hashtag
that.
Hashtag outage Wednesday. Well, you right. don't need a hashtag, I guess, if it's...
Well, where would you post your hashtags?
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
I realize that you don't really need the hashtag for it, so it's just outage Wednesday.
I mean, I feel like fear of missing out is at least, at minimum, counterbalanced, if not outweighed, by fear of meeting others. I'm trying to keep the acronym the same way. I mean, I just feel as though the people that I encounter on social media increasingly introduce more stress into my life than would otherwise be there. You know, I'll give an example. So yesterday, I'm interviewing the actress Jessica Harper about this kind of memoir she's doing in a podcast form. And her father was this very violent guy with this really weird temper. And, I mean, at one point, there's kind of a description of him hitting one of her brothers when the brother is essentially a baby. And so I said, and so your father, you know, hit children when they're way younger than is considered acceptable to hit a child, assuming you think it's ever acceptable to hit a child. And so this person gets on Twitter and said that I said it was acceptable to hit children. And like I spent one effort to clear it up and I got another nasty message back and I blocked her. But I thought, why? Why are you on Twitter just trying to correct somebody who didn't even make a mistake?
But part of it is your profile has a target on it.
Kick
right?
me?
Yeah. Exactly. You have a kick me on it because you're – I'm sure you're obligated to engage at a certain level by the platforms that you're working.
Well,
on,
I know. I don't know about anybody else here, but I have a one strike rule now. Like, if I make an effort to sort of straighten something out with you, and you come back at me, I just block you.
Yeah, I don't feed the trolls. Yeah. I worked on a show right. once, and like we were getting it was like a YouTube series, and we were getting like trolled pretty bad. And I remember the producers had a meeting with us, and you know, it was like, don't feed the trolls, just don't engage. Like, we'll just delete comments as they come. And I sort of just then adopted that into my own life. Because, yeah, I mean, I for sure, like, you get comments or you engage in accidental dialogue. Like, you post something and people just go nuts. One time I went to comment on something and autocorrect betrayed me. I went to say, I agree with Natalie, but like my autocorrect on my phone made me say, I agree with Nazis, which obviously I don't. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that it had autocorrected. I don't know why my phone jumped to that as an autocorrect.
Actually, the Nazis did that. They actually, they lobbied the autocorrect.
But it was
people.
Like obvious, there were at least like 10 comments. Some guy is like yelling at me being like, this is not a joke, Carolyn, not everything is a joke. And I was like, I don't think this is a joke. So, you know, after that, like, I just – comments are not a place for me.
Caught in that whirlpool. Yeah, I think at some point – I mean, I need to do this stuff for work. I need social media as part
I mean.
Of having
mm-hmm. – That's the kick me side
yeah.
for you.
Yeah. Right. But I don't know. I mean, I can imagine someday just shutting a lot of this down, and I don't think I would miss it at all.
I feel like a lot of the social media interaction I've been having is just people yelling at me about tolls.
Right.
That's been my life. And that's fine. That's great. I write about tolls. That's okay. But if that were to not happen for a day or two, I wouldn't really miss it.
Right. So speaking of does anybody else have anything else they want to say about the outage? I feel like the outage really didn't matter, and that should tell us something. So I think we can kind of segue on. This is a topic that you suggested, Susan, and I think there's some interesting places that we can go. There was a piece in The Ringer, I think, talking about what happens if there's a television show that you're watching and you can't find anybody who will talk to you about it because nobody else watches it except you. And you've had that experience.
I have. One of my very favorite shows ever is The Middleman. A little show that nobody really watched. It was this sort of...
The fact that we're all looking blankly
at
you right now.
Yeah, it's like
you
guys looking at me like, what is this show?
We can actually play a little clip of The Middleman. It's A2, I think, just to get people in a kind of middleman kind of mood.
Wendy Watson's life was falling apart.
You're breaking up with me for a class project?
And since she can't save herself, she might as well save the world.
I happen to be a pacifist.
They fight evil, so you don't have to.
You're getting paid more than $9 an hour for this job, right?
The new original series, The Middleman, premieres Monday, June 16th, only on ABC Family.
Trippy.
Susan actually started doing a little happy dance in her seat.
I did. I'm so excited. And of course, the last thing you heard there was ABC Family. Yeah. That was problem number one for that show. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a comic book, fun, zany kind of a thing. And ABC Family was just the wrong network for that to be on. It was smashed between shows that were – it was stuck between shows that were really very, very different in tone. It was awkward. It was strange for it to be there. And this was before streaming was really widely available, so people weren't streaming
it. When was this show?
About 2010, I think, 2008, something like that. So it was right on the cusp, right when streaming was becoming more popular. But for whatever reason, nobody picked up on this show. I thought it was hilarious. My one friend, who also liked the show, thought it was hilarious. And we still quote it back and forth. But nobody else watched it. So unfortunately, that's... You know, I would mention this show to people, and they're like, "What? What show is this?" And I said, "Oh, it's on ABC Family." And like, really?
You can never offend that friend. Now you guys are bonded.
That's right.
It's
true.
No,
bonds of fire.
Yeah.
Well, somewhere there's on the interwebs. Speaking of social media, there's a middleman discussion board or something. I don't think you want to be on that board.
No.
But it's there.
I think. I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's always fan communities. You can absolutely find them. All fan communities are, in one way or another, horrible. Mm. But I'm sure that it's out there, and I'm sure that they're great.
There has to be a Reddit subreddit.
I'm sure that there is.
You don't want to be there either.
Reddit.
Before we went on the air, one of you, I guess you were saying you go to a dinner party and people say, "What are you watching?"
Well, Jim said it, but I get that question all the time, and it's sort of like it's small talk that people, you know.
In lieu of weather.
Right, yeah. And it is kind of I don't know. For me, it's like a really stressful question because I watch like the lowest common denominator shows that are out there. Like
what are you watching right now?
The Bachelor.
Oh, he's just baiting me into this. All right, ready? I watch Real Housewives of New York and Naked and Afraid.
Dear God.
I know.
Those are two different shows, just so everybody knows.
Actually, if those could combine. Yeah. So when we were emailing...
We had one of the Naked and Afraid guys in here. We did a show.
Shut up, really?
We had the guy. He might have been on the first season. He was the guy who killed the snake. He killed the snake.
Oh, yeah.
And he was sort of a jerk. I mean, he was like, he played a jerk on the show and he kind of... He was aware that he had to accentuate his jerkiness.
Right, yeah.
See, this is the kind of conversation that, you know... It's like Middleman or something like that. I can have this conversation with. I've never actually watched the show except to watch that guy's episode. We're having a conversation right now.
Right,
anyways,
and Naked and Afraid is actually. I find it's an interesting show.
Can't you do that in the privacy of your own home though? Be naked and afraid.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you?
Is it really a show?
Do you have any need to talk to people about it? I guess that's the real question.
I mean, I guess if I found out somebody else was watching it, for sure, like that would open up a dialogue and maybe like a conversation that would have ended with me just awkwardly walking away. At least at least becomes a more pleasant experience.
You should check Facebook right now.
Right. Well,
hopefully there's an outage.
Those are both really popular shows, though. So.
Right. So I feel like there are a lot of the shows that I watch that are kind of embarrassing. I think a lot of other people watch and don't like talk about because they aren't like highbrow. Like you don't feel like you know, you're not like proud to be watching Naked and Afraid or something. But this made me think of, there are a couple of shows that I remember when I was watching them when they were first on, mm-hmm. people weren't into, like way back, Arrested Development. Like mm-hmm. I watched that when that was on air. And I feel like at the time people weren't as much, I mean, obviously, because it got canceled. And then when it got onto streaming, you know, when it's like that, I feel changed that show. Like it had got a whole new second life out of that. And then they tried to bring it back, which I right. think was a mistake. And also the comeback with Lisa Kudrow. I feel like I was a huge fan. Right? But a lot of people didn't. Again, that wasn't a highly watched show, but it was a brilliant show.
It was like 10-minute episodes sometimes, though, wasn't it?
We need to play a clip of something right now.
Oh, no.
Play A3. I don't I've lost my document. I don't know what it is, but it's an important clip.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to my trailer on the studio lot. Come on in. I've been cast in an HBO show.
Is this on?
HBO is making a series about Pauly G and an erotic older sitcom actress.
What? I'm not happy with you. That's not right.
Well, you read the script, and here you are. It'd be great to hear you read it.
HBO offered me a part in Seeing Red.
We're back on TV.
Well, no, it's not TV. They don't do that anymore, do they? Oh, no. I don't want people to see me like this.
This is Liz Novotny from the New York Times.
Not easy being green.
So one reaction I'm having to this conversation is, why are we having this conversation? No, the reaction I'm having to this conversation is, you know, there was a time not that long ago where humanity, or at least American humanity, could be divided up into people who watched Seinfeld and people who didn't. You know, I mean, there weren't that many choices, and there were these kinds of shows. I worked in an office where everybody, but not including me, would come in after 30-something, and I'll talk about what happened on 30-something. But now we live in an era where, because the platforms are so multifarious, there's so many different choices. You know, it's not that I don't like Lisa Kudrow. I really do like Lisa Kudrow, but I would never watch that show because I just wouldn't, you know? And I think it's one of those but I think it's a problem for a TV show to win you over these days. It has to work so much harder for it to accumulate a big enough following so that you could find somebody to talk to you about it. It really, I think it has to, oddly enough, it's become harder.
Because there's so much. Yeah. There are just so many more. Not only do you have like network TV and cable, now you have Amazon Prime, Hulu, YouTube Red, Netflix. So there's just so many platforms to have shows on that it's like overwhelming. Like you can find just obscure things and maybe they take off and maybe they don't. I just think it's like it's an oversaturated market.
It reminds me of the publishing industry, actually. It's like trying to get attention for your book at this point, where there's just so many. There's so many choices. There are so many publishers, both small and large and self. It's very difficult to be heard above all of the noise. And the things that get buzz, sometimes it seems completely random. You know, so really good things can get overlooked. Really iffy things can get a lot of buzz and get a lot of marketing, and who knows why. So I think it's like that, where it's very hard to find people who like the same books that you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. So I think we're kind of heading that way with TV because there's just so much.
It might be the same with music, too. Anything where there's just like the spigots are everywhere and there's this.
That's actually not the name of a band. We should make that clear.
It is now, though. Right now there's an indie band forming. The spigots are everywhere. But there is, you know, like the top 10 shows that they just throw money at to get them there, sort of like you would do to get your kid into college. And now there's the same thing with music. There's the top 10 that they play. But then underneath that is billions of songs that are trying to be heard, billions of books.
Right. I actually had that conversation back when I was a little bit more active as a writer with my literary agent. I said to her, well, Warner Books wants to meet with me about this project. What should I say to them? I asked my agent. And she said, you should ask them why anybody should care about your book when there's thousands and thousands and thousands of books being published every year and people don't care about most of them. And I said, aren't agents supposed to be more inspiring? Aren't you like supposed to?
They aren't.
You know, I'm supposed to say something that's going to make me really feel a little bit better about stuff. And you know, another thing that is in the piece that Susan directed us to, the piece in The Ringer, is another layer of this is that a lot of these shows that people may decide to adopt as personal darlings sit behind various kinds of paywalls. Somebody recently sent me a whole list of great shows that I should be watching, but some of them are on Acorn. I think I'm going to have to pay even more money to get Acorn, whatever Acorn is. Another one that was mentioned that was sort of the key to the piece is The Good Fight, which is Christine Baranski's kind of The Good Wife sequel. But it's sitting behind that CBS All Access paywall. I don't know. Why do they call it CBS All Access when, in fact, we don't have access to it? Same place that the new Star Trek series is sitting behind. So let's hear a little bit from The Good Fight.
This firm keeps working because we don't look at certain things. We don't pick at certain scabs.
Work has me thinking.
About?
Men and what they do.
What's going on?
Something's changed. We all feel it.
Things don't happen at this firm without a reason.
I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to do what it takes. Woo! Yeah! Yeah!
I actually bought the DVDs of The Good Fight for my significant other because she likes that whole sort of franchise and she loved The Good Wife, and we've been watching a little bit of The Good Fight. But Jim, increasingly, a lot of these things are operating on another business strategy, which is instead of calling it CBS All Access or CBS No Access, they should call it CBS We're Betting You'll Forget to Cancel Us. Because, like, the whole strategy, right, is that you're going to take the subscription, you're going to gobble up the stuff that you want, and then you're going to cancel out. But how many people have that kind of discipline?
Recently, me.
You?
But for the first time ever. So we're on our new austerity program. And so we peeled our cable way back and put in new Wi-Fi.
You're on the cable keto diet?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Protein only. Protein and conspiracies only. But what in its place now is Roku,
right,
which is now you have to decipher that. And then Roku, you're adding other platforms.
Right.
So it's becoming complicated. It turned me a little bit into a guy saying, get off my lawn.
I mean, Roku is that problem, right? Because the Roku immediately, you have to decide, are you going to do HBO Now? Are you going to do Showtime? Are you going to do Stars? Are you going to do Acorn? You looked at me like you knew what Acorn was.
I do. It's British TV.
Yeah.
And I love British TV.
Do you have Acorn?
I don't have Acorn. So I haven't paid money for it. Yeah, if I could get it, you know, for less money, I would. But I've had a Roku and nothing else for probably about 5-6 years, maybe longer at this point. You get to that point where you have to choose between platforms.
Do you do consultations?
I do consultations, and they're pricey, though.
There is some service now where they'll go in and they'll cancel stuff for you.
That's nice.
So I probably need that as it came out recently. So I was on the nose where we talked about that new Star Trek, and I signed up for CBS All Access, and it was like a free, you know, 7-day trial. And obviously here we are like a year or more later, and I'm still paying for CBS All Access. I literally haven't watched it since the 2 or 3 episodes of Star Trek I watched.
How much are you paying?
That's the worst part.
It's like $5.99.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I just every so often I'll like be going through like a statement of my credit card, and I'm like, oh, I have to cancel that, and I don't do it because
it's not quite enough money to be worth going through the hassle.
Well, yeah, no.
The one thing you didn't write down when you signed up was how you were going to cancel it, right? So the only connection you have to CBS All Access at this point is you look on your credit card, and there it is.
Right.
But you don't.
Know the password.
No, you don't know your password. You don't know how to get onto CBS All Access, but you're paying for it, and you also don't know how to cancel it.
Yeah.
I mean, what a business model.
Yeah,
this is like the best business model
scam
in the world.
They're counting on people like me whose lives are just that discombobulated that they – and, you know, you have, like, just enough that, like, you don't really care about that $6 a month. I am exactly the weakling target. And I have a Roku TV, and I have signed up for, like, so many things on that. Most of them – I mean, not pay – but, yeah, I like, weird ones where you can watch, like, TV shows like Mr. Belvedere from, like, the 80s. Yeah,
yes.
I don't even know what I'm doing. Why am I admitting to this stuff?
Wow. I have so much stuff that I'm actually looking for reasons to use some of it because I feel like, well, I'm paying for this thing. I should find some shows on this thing, which leads to me watching very strange anime in the middle of the night on Hulu.
Yeah.
Right.
So are you paying more because you just keep aggregating on Roku?
And she hasn't gotten Acorn yet.
No, all exactly.
Right. We have to take a break. We have to take a break while we sign up for some more TV subscription services we don't want. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Captain Marvel. I'd like to say that the entire summary of the preceding segment of the show is we have a lot of things that we occupy our time with and sometimes pay for, and we don't like any of them, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, stuff on TV. We are actually living in hell right now, and it's disguised as paradise.
Throw the switch, Colin.
I would also like to announce that the one and only season of The Middleman is available on DVD, and you can buy it on iTunes or Amazon Prime. And then you can be friends with Susan Bigelow.
That's
because
right.
She would like very much to talk to you about
be
it.
Be friends with me.
And you have to watch it first. You can't just buy it. All right. So we did go off to the movies this weekend. We saw Captain Marvel. It's the new, obviously, movie in the Marvel universe. It stars the wonderful, always wonderful Brie Larson. Samuel Jackson, preternaturally, I don't know. I mean, they made him look really young. I don't know how they did that. As Nick Fury, and let's hear a little bit of dialogue between the two of them.
Oh, you want to get personal.
Where were you born?
Huntsville, Alabama, but technically I don't remember that part.
Name of your first pet?
Mr. Snoofers.
Mr. Snoofers.
That's what I said. Did I pass?
Not yet. First job?
Soldier. Straight out of high school. Left the ranks of full bird colonel.
Then?
Spy.
Where?
It was the Cold War. We were everywhere. Belfast, Bucharest, Belgrade, Budapest. I like the bees. I can make them ride.
Now?
Been riding a desk for the past 6 years, trying to figure out where our future enemies are coming from. Never occurred to me they would be coming from above.
Name a detail so bizarre a scroll could never fabricate it.
A toast is cut diagonally. I can't eat it. You didn't need that, did you?
No, I didn't. But I enjoyed it.
Okay, your turn. Prove you're not a scroll.
Of course, all of you listening know that Skrulls are shapeshifters who can assume the form of anybody they see. And so the reason you have to ask somebody a lot of questions is to make sure they're not one of those Skrulls. I will say I actually laughed out loud at the diagonal toast line. And this movie is not one completely devoid of wit. And it has other things to recommend it as well, I think, anyway. So, Jim, maybe we'll start out with you and just sort of give us your thumbnail impression.
In keeping with my nose-learned tradition of not reading anything about a movie so I can go in with no expectations. I did that. Although I was aware of the sort of trolling against this movie, so I wasn't expecting much, but I came out really, really liking it. I don't know if I love it, but I really liked it.
Right. And we should talk a little bit more about the trolling later. Yet another reason to shut down the internet for a day a week just to make those people go away. And I don't even quite understand why they exist in the first place or why they would be so frightened by the idea of a woman carrying one of these superhero movies. But Susan, I'm going to keep Grumpy Cat here for the end. Susan, what did you think?
I mean, I really loved it. But I am actually a big fan of the Captain Marvel comics. I have quite a number of them. And I should say that there's this I really like the Captain Marvel movie because they made her backstory so much simpler. And if you watch the movie, you're like, that was the simple version?
Yeah, that's not that simple.
Yeah, but it's so much worse in the comic books. It's so much worse. It's just this tortured thing where this character has to go through all these different – anyway, believe me, you don't want to know about it. But I thought that the movie was really great, sort of the spirit of the comic books. They got the character perfectly. I thought it was fun. I thought it was, it was sort of comic book fun. It was great. You have a lot of great special effects. I thought that the story was, it was okay. The story was not bad, but the characters really carried it for me. And I got to tell you, I loved all of the 90s references and all the 90s music.
Yeah, so it's set in about 1995. I think one thing, I can only say this to you, I think among the people on the show, but there's a way in which also this movie backs up to 1995 and kind of takes one little jigsaw piece of this extraordinarily complicated Marvel story that has been unfolding in the Avengers movies and lots of other movies too, and just kind of drops it in. And I'm not even a good enough Marvel nerd to exactly see it all, but it's kind of like you're watching something happen in 1995 and you're kind of going, oh yeah, so I know that connects to this and this and then Guardians of the Galaxy. And you know, there's a way in which there's some connection being made there if you know enough to know what's happening.
Right. And of course, you can enjoy the movie without knowing all the connections. And not even I know all of the connections. There's about 5,000 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies at this point. I haven't watched them all. I've only seen like a small number of them, actually. But I know enough about the backstory that I know, well, this connects to that and that connects to that. But you can actually go into this movie completely new and having seen none of it. And it will still, like 95%, it'll make sense and it's fine.
Now for an opposing view.
Okay, so
the keto.
Yeah. All right. So this I have seen a fair amount of Marvel movies thanks to doing this radio show.
Never volitionally.
Yes. No, I don't think I've ever seen one been like, you know, just gone for fun. So this one though I didn't think was like as awful as some of them for me. This did
That's
suffer.
That's a poll quote.
Yeah, there you go. The Guardian.
This did suffer from that case where it's like essentially a 2-hour-long trailer for a whole other movie coming out, which, you know, to me, when you're not like part of this, when you're not really into, okay, they're like all ready. They're glaring at me, ready to attack. I'll tell you what I
we're
did
shaking
like.
Shaking our heads is what we're doing.
Well, yeah. Jim, that was a little more menacing, but I did like the music. I thought a battle scene to No Doubts, I'm Just a Girl, was something that we've always needed. And the cat, the feline actor, was spectacular. I really thought he was a standout, and if Marvel came out with a whole movie based around Goose the cat, I would willingly go see that.
There were people sitting behind me who worried the cat was being shaken too much.
No, I feel like
you
I pick up
activists.
My cat and yeah. shake him. I don't know.
Don't say that. Don't.
You're
going to
get
that.
Dragged on Twitter. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, probably. Yeah. No, but I did like the cat. I thought Samuel L. Jackson was really fun. And I liked his scenes with the cat. So that was kind of where I stood on it. Like it was a moderately fun way to pass 2 hours, I guess.
I mean, that's
a ringing endorsement.
I actually thought this movie was pretty good.
And too.
I mean, I actually thought, I actually, first of all, I love Brie Larson. I first encountered her in I walked into a New York movie theater not knowing too much about a movie called Short Term 12, and which was really kind of the movie that gave her a starring vehicle. And she was just tremendous. And I loved her in Room. And I would see her do almost anything. And I think she really does. I mean, there's some acting that you can put into some of these roles anyway. And I think she actually does do this. I mean, she has to sell a rather unique concept of who she is, what herself is. And it's, you know, I mean, a lot of these Marvel roles, it's kind of a lot of wisecracking, but she has to do something different here, and I think she does it really well.
She was great. And when I was watching it, I was thinking how, like, if I was, like, a young kid and saw this movie, I would totally, you know, I would, like, want to be her for Halloween. You know, like, I think she is, like, a great, like, she's a strong female character. She's cool. Like, I thought she did a great job portraying it.
And maybe, I know I'm stepping here, but I personally have been suffering from Marvel fatigue, mm-hmm. Particularly after Infinity Wars, which I think is still going on in my head. It was the longest, most leaden thing, and now...
Well, it is still... I don't know if you stayed all the way through the credits, but it is still going on in Captain Marvel.
Right, right. I always stay for the eggs.
Yeah.
So I think this was like a palate cleanser for me. It like kind of... Like, oh, these can be good, too. They're not just these leaden, thumpy-thump movies.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are somewhere near peak Marvel. And I felt sort of the same way about Infinity Wars, that, okay, they're showing us everything that they can, And they're just going to have to regroup somehow, like 2 or 3 years down the road. But I don't know. This movie had a kind of intelligence to it. And I think the nostalgia really did help with the nostalgic music. She's wearing a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt for, you know, large chunks of the movie.
Oh, the Blockbuster. Her crashing into Blockbuster.
Blockbuster. And then looking at certain movies, including The Right Stuff, which I thought was funny. She's holding up the box set of The Right Stuff.
Loading up the CD-ROM.
Yeah. And yes, looking up things on Alta Vista and having to wait a long time for the blue bar and stuff. I don't know. I thought they did some stuff with it that would have been entertaining even if it weren't a Marvel Comics Universe movie.
No, it's true. This is sort of the only 90s kids will get this sort of movie. It was wonderful. And people of my age can sit there in the audience and be like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember the Alta Vista. And, hey, look, they're driving that Chevy that some cops had. And it's all this great stuff. So the nostalgia factor absolutely did help. But, you know, I think that the character – Captain Marvel is just, she's sort of refreshing in the Marvel universe anyway, because yes, she's ultra powerful, wisecracking, great. But she's also a female character that doesn't wear a ridiculous costume that shows way too much skin. She's really confident, really, she doesn't have like a sort of a distaff counterpart of herself. She doesn't have like, you know, Mr. Marvel or whatever. It's true. So she's not part of a larger
force. Mr. Incredible is getting divorced, though, and he's started to date her.
So she stands on her own, and it's perfect in a lot of ways.
I have a technical question. You might know it. Does she need air?
When she goes into space, she actually has a mask that comes down.
I was really concerned about some of the.
But you see, the mask comes down, and that she's got like the cool Greek thing on
but
her.
But does that suit keep her from like burning during re-entry into the Earth atmosphere?
I think just her amazing coolness keeps her from burning up on re-entry.
Cool.
Yeah, at some point, I just am going to be like, all right, I'm just going to let that happen.
Right, which you have to do, right?
Yeah, suspension of disbelief. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to enjoy the movie.
I guess that's where I went wrong. Forgot to suspend my disbelief.
Well, there's also, by the way, I'm being told by the control booth that Nine Inch Nails is now selling a t-shirt that is subtly a Captain Marvel shirt right now. So Trent Reznor is capable of diving right into the commercial pool like everybody else. So, you know, another thing about this, and we can't really say that much about it, and it kind of depends on you either. Well, it depends on either not knowing certain things or not thinking very much about certain things. And when I saw this movie, I was in a tremendous amount of back pain, and I wasn't really thinking all that carefully. So it worked for me. But there's a turn in this movie. This movie actually, unlike a lot of Marvel movies, has a pretty major turn, you know, and I thought that worked well, too, that there was, like, something that I hadn't really thought through very carefully. And, I mean, you probably knew it was coming, but I'm pointing at Susan. But
yes.
Yeah.
But it was still good.
There's a surprise.
I loved that.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, it's like, oh, this is going to be an origin story, and we're going to just kind of progress linearly through her story. So that was a really nice sort of turn of events.
All right. So is there anything else we need? Well, we have a few more minutes we should talk a little bit about the trolling campaign.
Yes.
So there was
I just say, the aliens, I could have used maybe a little bit more upscale makeup attention.
You didn't like the
it was a little bit like Halloween mask stuff. Given the how good everything else was, I thought like You could up your game a little bit here, but that's a minor complaint.
They looked like the Bat Boy from the Weekly World News.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we should talk about the fact that there were people. Who knows who they are or what they're like?
Incel.
Yeah. I mean, I think the who were so threatened by the idea of this movie that they started trying to destroy it even before it was released, forcing Rotten Tomatoes to actually change their rules for user comments and to be a little bit more careful about screening what was happening. But there was actually a digital campaign going on to hurt this movie. And I'm wondering, like, what kind of person – I mean, I sort of know what kind of person.
4chan, 8chan, those guys that were upset that it was a woman who could kick their butts this time.
And would never date them.
Yeah, no, never.
No.
But it's almost like some of them are ironic about it. Some of them are really serious about it. And it's really impossible to tell the difference between the people who are just doing it for the lulz and the people who are like really actually serious about destroying stuff. They're just people who want to watch the world burn again. But this trolling is not a new thing. This has been going on for lots of woman-led movies.
It's Gamergate all over, too.
It is. Gamergate was one of the genesis points of this. And you can draw a straight line right from Gamergate to the election of Donald Trump.
Right.
There's
and from Gamergate to the attacks on some of the more recent Star Wars characters, female characters that people didn't like.
The destruction of Ghostbusters.
The destruction of Ghostbusters. I had another reason to think about it because Vulture, the division of New York Magazine, did a thing this week where they ranked 12 different, I guess there have really been that many, Star Trek captains in terms of their competency. And they ranked number one, Captain Janeway, that rare woman Star Trek. And I thought, I've got to read the comments just so I can see these guys. And they were there. She's the worst. She's the worst of the 12. She's horrible. She's this. She's that. And I just don't get it. I get it, but I don't get it.
There's nothing wrong with Captain Janeway. She was great. Her series was poorly written. But, you know, I think that the case was made that she was very competent and very cool-headed in the situation that she was in. I think it's reasonable. But, no, there's people who are going to get unbelievably mad about this stuff.
I will always have a soft spot for Captain Janeway because Kate Mulgrew, who played her, was in this studio and she was in the middle of a run playing Cleopatra. And as a result, she was in a very seductive mode. So she praised me constantly in a way that was, you know, completely artificial and uncalled for, but which felt very nice.
Naked and unafraid.
I was naked. No, I was clothed and afraid. All right. Anyway, we have to stop here. And somebody's telling me I've got to read the comments is never the right impulse, never a good idea. Probably true. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back after this.
It's time for the credits, but first I have to say a little about my backstory as Dr. Remarkable. Actually, people always pronounce it that way, but it's actually Remarkable, which is how they said it on my home planet, Hala, from which I was exiled by Conan the Usurper. But I turned out to be a human Skrzyzerek hybrid, but I'm also Scottish on my mother's side, and I have powers which I was not aware of until the day the Slore invaded the planet Kobek. Many Shubs and Zools knew what it was like to be roasted in the depths of the Slore that day, I can tell you. Anyway.
Kayon, are you almost done? Because we need the studio.
Okay, look, the point is... I've actually forgotten what the point is. Today's show was produced by General McPants and me, Kayon Wolf. Amanda Fish is not in this movie. The part of Bill Curry was played by Annette Bening. On Monday's show, is the American meritocracy a myth? And now... back to Colin.
That was an amazing cameo by Carmen Baskoff. I like having Carmen Baskoff cameos on this show so much I'm making excuses to have them happen. All right, time to make some recommendations. Susan Bigelow, why don't you get us going here?
So I'm recommending today, there's a great show called My Cat from Hell. That's what I'm watching, right?
Wait a minute, Carolyn gave up the rights to that title?
Yeah.
No, it's
your cat from hell actually is no longer with us. Anyway.
My cat is in hell back where she...
Oh, no. Don't tell me this.
No, she had this horrible cat that would bite people.
Yeah, no, she told me. It sounds bad. But this is a show about a guy who named Jackson Galaxy, who actually, he's a cat behaviorist. But he's also this big sort of tattooed guy with like a cool beard and an amazing car. And he has a guitar case that he carries cat toys in. It's great. So he goes around to people who have cats that have all kinds of problems, like they scratch them and they pee on the floor and they're horrible. And he goes and he works with the cats and he works with the people. And it's nice. It's wholesome because at the end, everybody's happy. The cat is in a great place.
And
the humans are feeling
good.
Where
do we see this show?
This was – it runs – if you want to actually watch it over the air, it's on Animal Planet, streaming in a bunch of different places.
Okay.
He actually does still – Jackson Galaxy sells cat toys. And I actually have to say – they're surprisingly good. Like, right. Our cats like them.
Caesar Milan for cats, basically.
Basically.
Okay. So before Jim goes, I want to quickly say on his behalf, the third annual Indivisible Shinola's concert at Infinity Hall is going to be May 5th at 5 p.m. I've done this in the past. It's really, really fun. It raises money for important causes. Guests this year include Jonathan Edwards, Christine Ullman, Tang Sauce, Winter Pills. It's not the Winter Pills. And they will smash their equipment on stage if you put that "the" on.
I might do it just to see that.
They'll go nuts, yeah. Nikita Waller, who's our Connecticut troubadour, Carrie Powers, Mark Arelli, Cat Wallace, John Pousset, Dark, Dennis Brennan. This is really fun. And one of the amazing things about it, I can say this and Jim can't, is watching Jim and his band turn themselves into a hip-hop band and then a country band and then whatever comes up next band. And Jim is running all over the stage calling out keys and stuff. And it's really fun. But they do it. They do it incredibly. So so stake out. You're going to need the whole afternoon and evening of May 5th for this really fun thing. But what do you want to recommend?
I think we should end the show right there.
Okay, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to sort of half-heartedly recommend Afterlife, the new Ricky Gervais 6-part series about grieving and an excuse for Ricky Gervais to be both horrible and nice. I think I liked it because I've been laid up, as you could tell by my voice, and spent a couple of days in bed thinking like I got to do something more than watch Game of Thrones reruns. And so I found this little show and it's, I don't know what to say about it. If you like Ricky Gervais, it's a nice way to see him. And then on a much more easy note for everybody around here. There's Barb's Pizza is back. It's in West Hartford Center, tucked behind the CVS. And it's really, really good. And sometimes you just need a really good slice, reasonably priced, really nice people. And I'm for it.
All right.
Barb's Pizza.
Pizza and maybe Ricky Gervais. And Caroline, what have you got?
All right. I also have a local food recommendation. Donut Crazy, which is now in West Hartford. Bear with me. They have donuts that are literally, it's like a s'mores on a donut or like an entire, it has like, they have candy on top. And
is it keto?
Yes, it for sure is, knowing what keto, yeah. It's just, they're really fun. And like, if you're going to have like an indulgent breakfast or, you know, want to like kickstart your day or, you know, they're good. So
briefly
I recommend
kickstart your day and then lapse into a coma.
Right. If you want to like have
a really productive
breakfast of champions is getting a donut from Donut Crazy and then taking a nap at 11 o'clock after eating it. so that is what I want to endorse. Also, I know I'm like a little late on this. I mean, I watched it a while ago, but the Fyre Festival documentaries on Netflix and Hulu. If you haven't watched them, you should definitely watch them because you will be at a social event and someone will start talking about them or referencing them. And they're just wild. So for sure, they are worth the watch. Both of them, too, because they take different approaches and are fascinating angles on a total hilarious disaster.
Well, I have been in sort of a grumpy mood about pop culture. And then on Saturday, my son and I went to the beautiful James Hanley-inspired Trinity Cine Studio to watch Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And it is – oh, are we doing it next week on The Nose? Should I not be talking about it? It's so – it really is one of the most amazing things I've seen in years. It is – and the animation of this thing is at a level I've never seen animation. The concept itself is kind of a brilliant concept. The voice roles are really unbelievably well cast, including John Mulaney as something I can't even talk to you about because it would wreck it. This is – yeah, the credits are – Wolfie's helping me out here with this. The credits at the end are amazing. I mean, I just sat there going, I mean, if at the end of this thing, we went to an afternoon show, if James had walked out on stage and said, you know what, we're just going to start it up all over again, I would have just sat there and watched it all over again, because there's also just quite a bit of material coming at you visually.
Is it still playing?
It's not there. It's playing at a few screens still. And you know, I don't know. I mean, it really does deserve to be seen on really good equipment. Maybe we can find out if James would consider bringing it back, because that's a great way to see it. But I guess if you have a really good system at home or something, you could probably do a pretty good job with it. I haven't been as excited about something in really quite a long time. So this it's Into the Spider-Verse. I don't want to say too much about it because you just really kind of need to see it. And we'll also do a quick shout out here at the end of the show to Hal Blaine, who died recently at the age of 90. He was from Hartford. He was the great session drummer of the Wrecking Crew. So many songs that you love feature a Hal Blaine beat on them. So, and we had this big plan to interview him, and we never did it. So, but we had good intentions for years that we were going to do a Hal Blaine show.